I don't eat corn, not corn flakes, not corn pudding, not cornbread, corn muffins, corn chowder.
My grandmother, Mama Ellie, was an excellent cook, and so we were glad that we had her, and my cousins were stuck with our great-grandmother and my granddaddy, probably just eating cornbread every day, mad as hell.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Henkin.
And this week on the podcast, From Scratch, two stories about memorable meals.
Both of these stories were shared at an event that we had recently at this really lovely place called Our Time Kitchen, which is in right around the corner from WYPR. So this first storyteller from that event, Michelle Pettis, is going to share a corn-laden story for you. Take a listen.
But it's not corny.
It's not. Oh, it's not corny.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. No, not at all.
I don't eat corn. Not corn flakes. Not corn pudding, not cornbread, corn muffins, corn chowder, corn syrup, corn oil, high fructose corn syrup, not even grits. And if you grew up on a farm playing in the cornfields of your grandparents who were farmers, that might sound a little extreme, like being from Texas and not liking sweet tea. Just kind of doesn't sound right. But here's the thing. Corn was everywhere, in everything. It was in the fried fish on Friday nights. It was in the corn dogs at the county fair. It was in the cornbread dressing on Thanksgiving. It was in the cornmeal crust on the fried fish, on the fried okra, on the fried green tomatoes. My grandmother's fried corn. And nobody on the planet made better fried corn than my grandmother. My grandmother would get her sharpest knife, and then she would really cut the ends of the tips of the kernel off. And then she would get a spoon and cull out the creamy sweetness, because she didn't want the hull. She didn't want the tough hull part of it to get caught in your teeth or in her dentures. That was important. So it was tough for me because corn was everything. Corn was everywhere. And so once I made the decision that I didn't want corn in my life because of my health journey, because of my struggle with food addiction, it was particularly hard, especially because I love tortilla chips. And being from Texas, I can tell you that there is really nothing better than a exquisitely crafted tortilla chips. Tortilla chips were my weakness, they were my joy, they were my kryptonite, until they weren't. So it was November 2021. I was in Dallas at my favorite restaurant, and I was meeting a friend for dinner, and she called at the last minute and said that she couldn't make it. So I'm in my favorite restaurant, my favorite Mexican restaurant. She can't make it. I don't have a problem eating in a restaurant by myself. So I go up to the bar and I order a jalapeno margarita, because that's the way they make margaritas in Texas, right? I order my margarita, and as I'm sitting there perusing the menu, the server comes and offers some chips. The bartender wants me to have some chips. I say, no, thank you. Not struggling, not resisting, just choosing not to have the chips. So as I'm sitting there perusing the menu, my mind goes back to the very first time I ever went to a Mexican restaurant. So it was 1971 in Marshall, Texas. It was the first year of forced integration in Marshall, Texas. And we had just finished studying the Organization of American States. And my white social studies teachers thought it would be a good idea if we culminated the study with going to El Chico, which was the only Mexican restaurant in my small town. So the permission slips went out. And all the phone lines, the party lines in the Black community lit up. Because we didn't go out to eat. That's not what we did. And so here's the conversation. Are you gonna let Michelle go down to the El Chico with the school? Girl, I don't know. Did you see how much it costs? It's $2.99. That's grocery money. You think they're gonna be all right down there? Well, I don't know. We gotta let them try something new. Well, I don't know. We're gonna have to pray about that. And so some of us were allowed to go. But there were some stipulations for this field trip. All of us got the same lecture. When you go down there to that restaurant, don't go down there acting like you have never seen food before. Don't put your elbows on the table. Put your napkin in your lap. Don't chew with your mouth open. All the etiquette, right? So, El Chico night came. We go down to the restaurant, my friends and I. And let me tell you what happened. We walked into the restaurant and all the white kids were having the time of their life. They were reaching across the table. They were slinging salsa, tossing back chips, laughing, having the best time. My friends and I, the Black kids, we were sitting at the table, polite, erect, correct, napkins in our lap, watching the mayhem before us, wondering what is going on with these kids, right? And so we're sitting there, and as I think about it, we never had the chips. We missed the best. What was the best part of the meal? Because we didn't know. We didn't understand. So I'm thinking about that as I'm sitting here at this 50 years later at the restaurant in Dallas, and young white guy sitting next to me sees my car keys. And he says, yeah, are you visiting? We strike up a conversation. I have my jalapeno margarita, no chips. We start talking. And he says, well, what do you do? You know, y'all always want to know what we do, right? So I tell him that I'm a writer, and I talk to him about food stories, the relationship between our emotions and food and history and culture and how it drives our behavior. And so he looks at me, and he says, I think you have something there. Now, I'm like, well, my goodness, why do you think I have something here? And he looks at me, and he says, now I understand. When my parents told me that they were getting divorced, I was eating steak, peas, and mashed potatoes. And every time I have that meal, I get sad. And from that point on, it went deep, y'all. We connected. Brandon and his buddy, we sat there, these two young white guys and a 60-year-old Black woman sat there at that bar, and we talked for 90 minutes. We connected. We talked about race. We talked about education. We talked about love. We talked about disappointments. We talked about dreams. We had a conversation that bridged generations, that bridged gender, that bridged geography. because I had moved the food out of the way. And as I sit there and I think about that conversation, here's what I think. I think, and this, not just I think it, I know it. If I had been at that bar the year before or 2 years before, the conversation would have never happened. It would have never happened because I would have been too busy in the chips. I would have been too busy crunching. I would have been too busy focused on the food rather than the person sitting next to me. I would have been closed. I wouldn't have been open to this opportunity to feel like, to be available for what it feels like to have that kind of connection. So, 50 years later, I'm at this bar. We have this connection. And now I'm reflecting on it. And what I see really clearly, is that in 1971, I didn't have the chips. I didn't have the chips because of fear and because of restraint. In 2021, I didn't have the chips out of freedom. Freedom. And when I think about those two instances, what I think is this, is that there were two tables, two moments in time, one basket of chips. And what it tells me is that sometimes the food does feed us, but sometimes when we let it go, it feeds us more. Thank you.
She's amazing. She's such an inspiration in so many ways. And what was near and dear to me, especially about her, is, you know, I love a multitasker. I love a person who's constantly like just hustling and getting shit done. She was on a Zoom in our time kitchen, in like the office space, like up until the point in which she came on to share.
Wow, her story. Like a boss.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I love her.
I found myself the whole time being like, well, what is the tortilla chips taste like? I was like salivating for like the chips. Tell me what the chips taste like.
Yeah. Well,
turns out that wasn't the most important part.
Oh, well, it
was the connection.
It was. And the fact that if she had been salivating over the tortilla chips, she would not have had that connection.
I feel like I could do both, but.
I really.
As long as I had my own basket of chips and I didn't have to share them with anybody. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with one more story from scratch. So this next story from Anne Maria Beard is really a story that's a feast for the senses. Take a listen.
It was the summer of 1979, and my grandmother, Adelaide, Mama Adelaide, wanted to go visit her sister, whose name is Catherine on paper, but Catherine in Alabama. And we were not allowed to call her that because we were kids. She was Auntie. So we got Mama Adelaide and Auntie. Somehow, three of us kids go along, my younger cousin and my cousin Julianne, who's visiting from Detroit, but somehow ends up in the car with us going to Kentucky. I'd never been to Kentucky. You ever been to Kentucky? And I had no clue what was waiting, but Monday morning early, my Aunt Sandra Jean packed the car, our clothes, and also a bushel of purple whole peas for Auntie. My grandma was riding shotgun, and the three of us kids got in the back seat. And we rode and we rode and we rode. And the world changed. We were in the mountains of eastern Kentucky. My great aunt lived in Harlan. She was like a mountain goat. When we got there, I was thrown off completely. You know, you go visit people, you pull into the driveway. There's no driveway. My aunt parks the car on a large patch of dirt and gravel. And I'd wonder where the house is, because straight ahead of me, I see about a 12-foot tall brick wall with a big curve in it, but no house. My grandma points up, there it is. This house is on the damn mountain. So we're about to cross the street, loaded down with all of our things, and suddenly we feel the earth trembling beneath our feet. My aunt puts her hand on our shoulders and pulls us back. A coal truck, full, flying, comes around that blind curve as if there's no chance that a little kid is in the street waiting to go across. We cross the street, all loaded down. We open this little gate, and we stand on a step, and we look up, and there are 20 steps. Before you get to the porch, we go up the steps, and then we go up the porch steps, and we're in the house. Now, it's important to know that my Mama Adelaide and auntie, while sisters, were so different from each other. My Mama Adelaide was tall, and she was what you would call stout. She was very sweet. She's very kind. If you passed by her while she was doing something, she'd pull you close and pat you or give you a kiss if she could. Very, very affectionate. No sharp edges. Auntie was about half foot shorter than Mama Adelaide. She wasn't skinny, but she certainly wasn't as stout. And that woman was as prickly as a porcupine. To show you how affectionate she was, from the time I was a toddler, she gave me a very special nickname, Miss Beard, which is my name. Can you imagine calling a three-year-old Miss Beard? But that was fine with her. So we were in Auntie's territory, living by Auntie's rules. The three of us kids walked around the house gingerly, trying to figure out where can we play, what are we going to do while we're here for this week. She didn't have a backyard. It was a patch of concrete. And about 5 feet away from that, another brick wall. But over the top, you could see a huge rock. The yard was on the side. We couldn't play there. So we spent most of our time watching reruns of Batman and Robin on the two channels that they could actually get reception of up in these mountains. So it was very difficult. One of the happiest and saddest things was my grandmother, Mama Adelaide, was an excellent cook. And so we were glad that we had her, and my cousins were stuck with our great-grandmother and my granddaddy, probably just eating cornbread every day, mad as hell. But there was one thing that we were missing. At my grandparents' house, you didn't have to eat what was for dinner. You always hear people saying, whatever I put in front of you, you're going to eat. My grandmother was our secret weapon. She, years before, she was a lunchroom lady, complete with a hairnet and her white cotton uniform. She had been a short order cook at Russell's Cafe. So you could come home from school, take a look, and my entire family migrated every day to my grandparents' house for dinner. That's how they planned it, and that's how everybody liked it. You could look and say, black-eyed peas, I don't want that. You sidle up to my grandma and say, Mama, I don't want black-eyed peas. And she would say, well, tell me, what do you want, baby? I said, I want a hamburger and french fries. She'd get up, fix it, order up, ding, ding. My great-grandmother would be furious, and my great-aunt, when she was visiting, would complain bitterly. So that we knew there was no way we were getting our own customized meals while we were there in the mountains. We were so bored that about twice a day, after we aggravated each other so much, we would go down all the stairs, stop at the bottom step, wait to find out if the ground was shaking, and if it wasn't, we would run across the street. Now, on the other side of where the cars parked, there was a river. Not riverbed, no shore or anything. It was like a drop down about 10 feet or so. And there was a bridge. Now, you would imagine that three little girls who don't know how to swim are too far away to call for help wouldn't do anything dangerous. Well, you don't know us. So we found out that the bridge was a swinging bridge. And every day, about twice a day, out of sheer boredom, we would go to the bridge and take turns standing in the middle while the other two cousins tried to throw us off into this river. Finally, the visit was coming to a close, and we were so happy. We were going to leave early Monday. Saturday night, my Aunt Sandra, ever the Girl Scout, said, let's go ahead and get packed so that we'll be ready to go. She knew we were tired of Auntie, and Auntie was tired of us. So finally, it was Sunday, and we were leaving the next day, and my grandmother was cooking and cooking, and I mean cooking. This woman has people that she fed, she's deceased now, in grade school who are in their 80s. And if they see my mom and me, they still talk about her homemade rolls and cinnamon rolls because she worked when you had to cook stuff from scratch in school. So we were excited. There were all these good smells filling the house. There was candy, yams, fried corn, cornbread, string beans, turnip greens. She was baking a big hen. It was fantastic. And friends of my aunt's were going to come over. So we had to go pick up one of her friends, Miss Simonia, who was about this big, and we loved her. We head off. My aunt, there's no way my aunt is leaving us there if there's a chance to escape for even 10 minutes. So it's sprinkling when we leave, but not too bad. We go pick up Miss Simonia. We're headed back, and you can tell it's been a serious storm while we were gone. The ground is wet. There's this huge tree down across the road. The state troopers are helping us around it. Finally, we park the car on our little patch of gravel, wait to make sure, and thankfully, the storm has stopped all the coal trucks, so we're safe. Go across the street, up the stairs. Before we can open the door, my grandma yanks it open, and she's standing there looking panicked with her apron on and her eyes so big, and she says, "All that good corn, all that good dressing." And we're just looking like, what on earth is wrong with grandma? And my aunt says, "Mama, what's going on?" We get in and we find out chaos has broken loose in this house. There's a man in a yellow vest and a hard hat talking to my great aunt. My great uncle, her husband, who we never called uncle, he was Reverend Childs. I believe my aunt called him Reverend Childs. He was 23 years her senior, and I'm sure a very nice man, but by the time we came along, he was tired. I thought of him as the Sphinx. You saw him, you never saw him move, you never heard anything. Well, the Sphinx was up. He was talking, he was complaining. He kept saying, "I'm not leaving this house. My vault is in this house." And so that was going on. This was going on with my aunt, and we looked straight ahead, and there, a crack from ceiling to floor. The boulder had burst loose, come through the wall, and hit the house. So we're just like, what is going on? Great uncle's complaining. My great aunt is saying, "You can stay here if you want to. We're leaving." Finally, we go into the kitchen, and there stands my poor grandma in her apron, looking down into this galvanized steel bucket. All of the countertops and cabinets are on the floor, like all over the kitchen. You can tell that she had put her food there, or our food, while she was getting everything ready. We looked into the bucket, and indeed, the entire pan of corn was there, and all that cornbread dressing that she worked so hard to make. She just kept saying, "All that good corn, all that good dressing." And every 10 minutes or so, she'd say, "Look at Catherine's kitchen." Look, just trashed. Well, we had to leave, including the Sphinx. We had a chocolate cake, string beans, and a hen that survived the massacre. We packed those up along with our things. We got back into the gray and burgundy Chevrolet, and we went to spend the night in Lynch, Kentucky, at Miss Mary Jackson's house, one of Auntie's friends. And we left the next morning so relieved to be free and so excited that the most boring week in the world ended with a big bang. Thank you. Oh, there's one more thing I want to just ask real quickly. So next Friday is Mama Adelaide's birthday. In my family, we call it Adelaide Day. And we do something she would do. So if you cook, please cook. Share it with somebody. If you don't cook, invite somebody out. If there's a program or school or something where you know there's grants have been stopped and people are in need, give them a little money to feed them. My grandma would be so, so happy. She'd be happy enough to bake you a chocolate cake. Thank you.
I mean, just the sound of the coal trucks, the shaking, the house falling down, you know, grandma worried about the dressing.
I especially love the part where she and her cousins would just try to shake each other off the bridge. Like, just those kind of details, like that childhood memory, the childhoods that we grew up with, which were just fraught with danger, like danger. And we thrived.
We really turned out so well.
We left such a great world.
We have no issues or problems. Yeah, we're doing everything right. Thank you so much for listening today on the podcast. You can visit us at stoopstorytelling.com and you can listen to stories and find out about upcoming shows. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. And we will be back soon with more stories from the Stoop.